Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. We are talking about the Maryland Film Festival, or actually, he is, and we're listening. Hi, David. How are you?
I'm doing okay, Jill. How about you?
Very well.
Glad to hear it. Okay, so listen up. I like the way that you emphasized the word Maryland when you said I taught at the Maryland Institute Maryland Institute College of Art, because I would like to talk about the Maryland Film Festival this week. And first of all, it just wrapped up the other day, and I would like to say a word or two about why, because obviously most of our listeners are not in Maryland, much less in Baltimore, where the festival takes place. Conveniently, just a few minutes walk from where I live. First of all, it's a regional film festival. It's not a big major one like the Cannes Festival or the Toronto Festival or the New York Film Festival. It's regional, but there are a lot of regional festivals all around the United States and elsewhere. In fact, not too long from now, I'm going up to the White River Independent Film Festival up in Vermont. So they're all over the place. And they're an important circuit because they are a way of introducing new films to people. And it doesn't mean that everybody's going to be able ever, even if they want to see all of these films, which have just come down the pike. But it's kind of like, you know, the reason people, for example, read maybe the book review section of a newspaper or a magazine, that, you know, they're not going to read all the books that are reviewed there. Maybe they're not going to read any of the books that are reviewed there. But people like to know what's going on. And so for people interested in film, film festivals, large ones, and also smaller regional ones like the Maryland one, are a good way of just kind of introducing new films and getting the word out about them. And also it does give early exposure to some movies that are already on their way to theaters. And that is the case with the film festival. It just wrapped up here in Baltimore the other day because a few of its movies are already on their way to theaters. They'll be opening soon. And then nowadays that we have the DVD and Blu-ray market and streaming and all of that, even more of these films will be available to people who might want to seek them out. So regional festivals, as well as larger ones, are really good for introducing new movies and maybe letting people know what they might want to be on the lookout for, either in theaters or in other platforms in the fairly near future. So with all of that said, I have to say that this year's Maryland Film Festival was not a distinguished year, which surprised me a little bit because I think that overall, so far, 2019 has been a pretty good year for movies. But there were certainly some things that were worth seeing, and again, some things that are on their way to movie theaters where a lot of people can see them. Let me start out with a movie that's actually already opened theatrically, and that is Decade of Fire, directed by Vivian Vasquez Irizarry and Gretchen Hildebrandt. Decade of Fire is a documentary about just a few decades ago what's often referred to as the burning of the South Bronx. There was a period when New York was in terrible financial and economic shape, generally speaking. And this, of course, hit minorities and economically deprived areas of the city far worse than any others. And no area was more underprivileged and deprived economically than the South Bronx. And fires started galore. Things were ablaze all over the place. And there were all sorts of stories and in some cases lies about what was causing the fires. A lot of them were started simply by people who owned buildings and were now losing money and didn't want to keep up losing money and keep up their payments and keep up their maintenance and so forth. And so they simply hired arsonists to burn the place down and collect on insurance. There were other reasons too why various of these fires started. But this movie is, it's not a distinguished documentary. It's very much by the numbers, but it's informative. It gives you a lot of information about the burning of the South Bronx a few decades ago, and it certainly has lessons for us to keep in mind now, as a lot of parts of the United States are in economic trouble, not that bad economic trouble, but we might think about the kinds of things that can happen when areas, including urban areas, are just allowed to slide. And it's a good historical documentary, and I think that it does have lessons for today's world. So again, it's called Decade of Fire, and it's certainly worth seeing for anybody interested in the urban scene or in recent American history. I'll mention another movie, which is be on its way to theaters, I think, in a couple of months from now, which is a film called Loose, directed by a new filmmaker named Julius Ona. And this was the closing night of the Maryland Film Festival, the closing night of Traction. For many years, I used to be on the selection committee of the New York Film Festival at Lincoln Center, and the closing night film was a little bit special. It wasn't as special as the opening night film, but it was, you know, it was something that was supposed to have a little extra pizzazz. And I'm afraid that Loose does not have that. I was very disappointed in Loose, which, again, will be opening in theaters, I think, late this summer. It is about a young man from Africa, from Eritrea, who's been adopted by a couple of he's a black man, a young man, and he's been adopted by was adopted as a child by a white American couple and brought to the United States, where he has grown up. And he is one of those shining examples of a stellar youth. He does brilliantly in all of his classes in high school. He's going to be graduating soon with all kinds of distinction. He gives speeches in his school and all of that. But he gets involved in some intrigue, which is not really his fault, involving some people he knows, and there is guilt by association and this kind of thing. And we have a lot of interesting discussion in the movie about whether it's just as bad to stereotype a person as being superior as it is to stereotype a person about being inferior, and the idea of the model minority and things like this are all themes of the movie. So it's a very, very socially responsible and progressive movie in all kinds of ways, but it is so painfully earnest and strenuously constructive that after a while I just felt like I was being preached at. The climax of the film is the main character, Luce, giving a speech for his high school's culture month. And by that time, the movie was coming to a close. I felt like I had sat through an entire culture year. The movie has a good cast, has wonderful actors in other main parts, Tim Roth, Naomi Watts, but I was very disappointed in Luce. So I hope it finds an audience because it has a very again, progressive message, but then again, if you want to sit this one out, I certainly wouldn't blame you. Another movie which is going to be opening in the later part of the summer is a film called Cold Case Hammarskjöld, which is about the former United Nations Secretary General, Dag Hammarskjöld, a fascinating person in his own right, and the movie does not get into all the reasons why he was so fascinated. For example, he was something of a mystic, and that's unusual for a person who is extremely prominent on the international political stage, to be also involved in sort of mystical thoughts and writing them and stuff. So the movie doesn't really get into that. What it does get into very, very much is the plane crash that killed Hammarskjöld when he was on his way to try to broker a kind of a peace deal, again, involving Africa. And there has been controversy over this plane crash and what caused it and whether it might have been a plot, if it was a plot to kill Hammarskjöld, whether it was a bomb that downed the plane or whether it was fire from the ground that downed the plane, or whether it was fire from another aircraft that downed the plane. And the movie gets into all of that. And as it goes along, trying to solve that mystery, the movie gets into other areas and opens up all kinds of sort of international conspiracy stuff, which is very interesting. At the beginning, the filmmaker, Mads Brugger, says that this is either the world's greatest conspiracy theory or the world's greatest just kind of big nothing with a whole lot of little facts woven into a great scheme, or perhaps it is really something important about something really, really important that happened back in the 60s. And Mads Brugger allows us to make up our own minds about that, although he comes to all kinds of conclusions along the way. The filmmaker, Mads Brugger, is very, very much a part of this film, and in ways the movie is more about him than it is about Dag Hammarskjöld. But it's an interesting movie. It's a bit long, and it kind of rambles about a bit. In fact, I it's really kind of a rambling film. But it's interesting, and those people interested in kind of mid-20th century history and who remember that history especially will find a lot of interesting material in this movie. Another film, which I'm sure is going to find a very broad viewership when it eventually starts to get around in movie theaters, I hope, and certainly on other platforms, is a movie by Stanley Nelson called Miles Davis, Birth of the Cool. And this is another documentary, and it is, yes, you guessed it, about the tremendous jazz great Miles Davis, one of my all-time favorite artists in any field from throughout human history, a truly, truly towering figure in jazz. And he was part of the great bebop revolution, but in the 1950s, he revolutionized that revolution by pioneering cool jazz, especially through a couple of legendary albums, one called Birth of the Cool, which is where this movie gets its subtitle from, another one that came out around, you know, roughly the same time, called Kind of Blue. And Miles Davis, again, pioneered the cool version of sort of bebop. Bebop tended to be a hot, overheated, jumping around kind of music, and Miles Davis went in the opposite direction and gave a kind of introspective music, which was introspective in its sound, introspective in its moods. Davis himself often played with his back to the audience. So it's all about Miles Davis. It covers his biography in rather sketchy ways, but once it gets his youth and early life out of the way, later on, it deals with some of the problems in his life, too, such as his drug addiction. But aside from that, it delves into his music in some detail, and I think pretty illuminatingly. It skims over some things. It never really gives, I think, newcomers to his music a sense of why it was so revolutionary in its time and why it was so innovative and why he was such a gigantically important figure in the field. But you get lots and lots of his music in the film. You get lots of people talking about him. You get his own words read on the soundtrack. And it's just a really, really good movie if you love jazz, if you love Miles Davis, or if you're just interested in the 20th century cultural scene. It's a good movie. I want to talk about a movie called In Fabric by Peter Strickland, who is a very daring, almost avant-garde kind of a filmmaker. A few years ago, he made a movie called The Duke of Burgundy, which has nothing to do with the butterfly of that name, but which I find just one of the most adventurous and kind of memorable and gets under your skin movies of in a very long time. And now he has made another film, first time in a few years, called In Fabric. And it's basically a horror movie about a haunted dress, hence the title, In Fabric. And I found it a disappointing from Peter Strickland, but it's a very, very adventurous film in all kinds of ways. It tells a very unusual horror story with all kinds of jumping around and people, weird characters doing weird things, and above all, a very interesting visual style and a very beautiful color scheme. It's what some critics call an example of the cinema du look. A movie where the look of the film, the overall tone of the film, is really what the movie's about, much more than the story, which is not really that interesting. I had a good time watching it. I found it a disappointment from Peter Strickland, but I'm glad he's on the job. He's kind of expanding the vocabulary of cinema in some interesting ways. Donbass, a movie from Ukraine by Sergei Loznitsa, was an interesting movie. A very, very darkly, even morbidly comic excursion into the political and military woes of Ukraine in recent years and in current times, too. It's basically a very episodic movie, sort of like that old American indie classic Slacker, where kind of a person who's on the margins of one scene becomes the major character of the next scene, and then a marginal character from that becomes the major character of the next scene, and it kind of rambles about and goes from scene to scene and place to place and character to character, all the while bringing us into, again, this very darkly comic view of what's been going on in Ukraine with all kinds of corruption and problems and dishonesty and hopes for the future. So again, Donbass, interesting movie, which I hope does find an audience. Every year at the Maryland Film Festival, Baltimore's most famous filmmaker, which for better or worse happens to be John Waters, gets to present a film of his own choosing. This year it was a fairly recent American horror film by a guy named Brian Taylor called Mom and Dad, which is about a situation where for some reason or other, parents start killing their children. And it's kind of a horror comedy or a comic horror film full of all kinds of gruesomeness and gore. It has its points. I like horror movies. It's sort of fun in its own sort of morbid way, but it's the kind of movie that John likes a whole lot better than I do. And I want to finish up this little quick little tour through some of the items in the Maryland Film Festival by talking about far and away the best film I saw, a Thai film from Thailand by Phuthaphong Arunphang, and it is called Manta Ray, and it is dedicated to the Rohingya people, and it is about a young person who works in the fishing trade, who out in the forest one day discovers a person who has been beaten almost to death, takes this person back to his hut, nurses him back to health, finds out that this mysterious foundling, this adult foundling from the forest, does not speak, either by choice or because he is not able to, and a relationship develops between these two young men, and it is a mysterious film, it is a moody film, it is a visually magical film which I could not take my eyes off it. One of the most stunningly cinematic movies in terms of its audio-visual content that I have seen in a very, very long time, and I am seriously hoping that this movie from Thailand, Manta Ray, will find a big audience, because it is one of the best films from any country in the world that I have seen in a very long time, and I am grateful to the Maryland Film Festival for having brought it to my attention. And that is my very Baltimorean story this week, Jill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Baltimore, Mr. Maryland, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the Maryland Film Festival.